Hey, and welcome to Solidity Galaxy Brain, the show where I talk to Solidity developers about the contracts that they've written and the ones that they admire. Today's episode, Splits Contracts, with Mirror CTO and co-founder Graham Boy and Foundation CTO and co-founder Elpizo Choi. On this episode, we'll also be joined by Masterfile CTO Garrett Hardin and Foundation engineer and co-author of the Foundation Split Contract, Paul Cowgill. This conversation was recorded on Twitter Spaces on August 24th, 2021. This is also the first episode of Solidity Galaxy Brain, and if you don't know me, my name is Nicholas, and I go by @Nicholas with four leading N's on Twitter. This is the first episode, so I'm really excited, and I hope you enjoy it, and I look forward to doing more of these in the future. So here we go. Here is our episode on splits contracts.
Props for getting this set up. This is actually like a pretty good lineup of people discussing something that I think is really important and very cool. Well done getting this like together organized.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here. Obviously, the Foundation and Mirror, two really inspirational products in the kind of growing NFT space. So I'm excited to get up here and get some FaceTime and learn some stuff from you guys while we're here.
Amazing, cool.
Yeah, awesome. Actually, so this kind of came together. Maybe it's worth spending a few minutes on the story. I figure, by the way, we'll talk for about an hour. And if people want to stick around after that, welcome to hopefully get some questions from the audience in a little later on. But this all started from a little tweet. It's actually the second tweet of mine about this kind of thing. I just put out a tweet saying more recently, I'd love to see someone do a comparison of the two splits contracts that I'm aware of and any others that are out there. And Garrett hopped on with a reply saying that he was working on a piece about this. And then Graham popped in and said, I know something about this. So that's sort of the origin of this conversation. But actually, I'm kind of interested in producing maybe more generally some more conversations between Solidity devs, as much as possible, getting into the nitty-gritty of how things are put together in a contract or in a set of contracts to make a project happen. And there's been some interest around that idea on Twitter. So yeah, hopefully this is the first of more conversations in the future.
Amazing, cool. Yeah, really excited to talk about it. Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, the splits, the method of splitting here is very, very different and really depends on like the kind of products that we are building. And so I think it's good context to kind of frame the conversation in terms of how is Mirror like really different from Foundation and why do they have separate audiences that make like these really different like methods make sense for each of the individual projects. Because I don't think that our method of doing splits makes sense for Foundation and vice versa. And I think that's like, you know, one of the key questions is why, what makes the products like really different?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what was the problem? I guess we'll start with Mirror. Graham, what was the problem you were trying to solve when you set out to write the splits contract?
Yeah, so we had all these things like crowdfunds and like NFTs of essays. And if you think of like an essay, like it often has like many inspirations, right? You know, it just goes back through a tree of people who have kind of contributed ideas to any given essay. So we thought it'd be cool if you could split revenue from the sale of that NFT with those people who had inspired the essay. And so we wanted a way to do that. And so we explored various options. And It was quite clear that there was sort of a quadrant of different solutions. One was like a pool model where you gave everybody their split and they could like pull it from some contract. And that turned out to be like very gas efficient to do that. And then the other one, you know, the other like major like category was like these push models where you kind of told the contract ahead of time what addresses needed to receive the funds and in what allocations. And then you know, the owner of the NFT or the person who's closing the auction would just, you know, submit a transaction that would just send those funds in like a push way to all of the recipients. And so the problem that we were solving was just basically like, how do we like, you know, maximize the amount of people who could like receive splits in the most gas efficient way? And then we looked through all the options and like prototyped each of them. And what I found is in the push-based model, that was the most convenient for the end user because they would just receive the funds automatically to their wallet. But it was more gas intensive for the person closing the auction. And there was a really small number of recipients that you could specify. There was about like 10, you know, 10 or 15 recipients max that you'd really want to specify as the recipients of those funds. And there are like various ways that you can like make those that a little bit more efficient, but fundamentally that's like your constraint. And we would just like want to be really ambitious and push the model. And so we wanted to have a split that could do like 1,000 different people, where you could just say this whole community like inspired me, and these are all of the people involved, and each of them should get an allocation. And so that we were basically solving that problem that was really ambitious. I think foundations, like the problem that they were solving was like really different, and so they picked the push model. So maybe they could like give some context on that.
Yeah. So just before we jump to El Piso, I wanted to know, Graham, did Mirror invent splits? Is this the first contract of this type that was on mainnet, or like, I'm curious, why didn't DeFi ever come up with anything like this? Why did it take someone coming more from, more from the NFT space and fundraising space to think about this?
Okay, that's a really, really important question. So, we definitely like spoke a lot about this in our article on splits, which is on dev.mirror.xyz. We definitely did not invent, the airdrop. The airdrop has been around for quite a while. Like the first code that I'm aware of was by Means Toll, who did a kind of Merkle proof on chain that could just prove some off-chain data on chain and then submit a transaction based on that. And then that evolved into an open library by Open Zeppelin, which got used by at least Uniswap. That's the most famous example, where they actually dropped, I forget how many, but like millions of people, I think, received the Uniswap airdrop. And it was, just so many tokens. There was no way that they would have been able to push those tokens individually to each of those people. And so what they did is they stored the allocations, which are not percentages, they're actually absolute values. Like this is how many tokens each person should receive in a tree. And then they take the Merkle root of that tree and they publish that on chain. And what that allows, and this is just an incredible like technical feat, is it allows any person to prove that they are part of that tree in a very gas efficient way, and then claim their allocation. So Uniswap already did the first major version of this in their airdrop. And then what we did is just said, how can we make this a percentage allocation and allow it to be continuously reused? So we innovated a little bit in changing the model from absolute values to percentages and then allowing the contract to be reused. But it does have a history. So I wouldn't say we invented splits, but we did invent some allocation kind of model of it.
Yeah, and just weighing in here, I think this is a great question, and I think it's the thing that you'll see, and I think that the thing that makes NFT so powerful is DeFi. I think we're not going to be reinventing a lot of things that DeFi hasn't already touched in terms of both the problems you're trying to solve or the approach to solving those problems. But I think the audience you ship that into is massively increased with NFTs, because I think for the first time you have crypto native assets and you have on-chain revenue from those assets. And so I think what Graham's talking about here is like, there's been airdrops, there's been tokens, right? People have kind of airdropped tokens to a bunch of people. But then I think those are always kind of, those were retrospective, based on behavior in the past and shipped to people that are already part of the community. Whereas for both Mirror and Foundation, we're tapping into much larger audience, much newer audience. And I think the use case is going to be different, even if the underlying approach is going to be similar. So you'll see this theme play out, I think, like across from DeFi to NFTs. I think it's going to be like a really interesting thing to watch play out.
That's interesting. So tell me, how did Foundation approach the problem, and what was the different, what made the design choices different? What informed those different design choices? How did you frame the problem?
Yeah, so for us, I think we approached it from the perspective of we're seeing a lot of creators collaborating with each other. And so we were seeing people do NFTs, and in the description, people would write, oh, this was a collaboration with so-and-so. Or they would say part of the funds would go to, this group that they were a part of. And so I think when we approached it, when we saw, splits as a concept, really thought about just looking at the use cases that have already been carved out on Foundation. It was fewer recipients than I think what we're seeing on Mirror. And then also the expected behavior already from these auctions on our product was the automatic payouts. I think if we were to have to do, you know, claims at the end, that'd be a very different flow and it'd be hard to reason about. And so for us, I would say, and I definitely agree with Graham that the approach, the difference in approach probably stems from like different difference in audience and use case. And so for us, really, we try to keep it simple and try to not break mental models, which is why we opted to go with automatic payouts. And then we can talk through, you know, there's a bunch of trade-offs that happen when you go with that.
Yeah, I thought it was doing some research on both of these implementations. I thought it was a great kind of case study of trade-offs as an engineering problem, because in kind of the introduction of splits from both of you, you mentioned the other version of this implementation. So like the push versus pull model, really exploring that whole design space. So I think it's a really interesting kind of case study of how do you measure and take into account all the different trade-offs when you're implementing a new engineering problem. So kind of selfishly, I thought that was a really cool part of doing research for this problem.
Yep, totally.
So, Alpizo, do you think you could walk us through, it sounds like the foundation's contract is in a way more straightforward from the execution perspective. Could you walk me through, like, if I was gonna interact with it strictly through Etherscan, walk me through how the contract works.
Yeah, you're talking about the splits contract, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the way we implemented splits is we used the EIP 1167 implementation from Open Zeppelin. And essentially, there's a parent split contract that you create clones from. And really what happens is you pass in a salt. And then from there, it deterministically using create2 deploys a new version of the contract with the exact same logic, but slightly different inputs. So I think for us, like what happens is from the client side, when you mint an NFT and you specify that there is gonna be a split, we then generate a new split contract from that parent contract and pass that in as a payment address. And there's things that we can go into to make sure that it is deterministic. But essentially each split with the recipient and allocation would generate a same contract. And then from there is just a matter of, you know, when the auctions are settled, the payment is routed to that contract rather than just from the initial creator.
So does that mean if I were to set up an identical split that it would actually end up referencing the existing split if I'd already put one out with the same parameters passed in?
Yep.
Okay, very interesting.
That was a really cool feature I saw. And I was curious for Graham, does it work a similar way if you specify the same Merkle root for a splits contract? Does it create a second splits contract, or does it just reference the first one that's already there?
Yeah, it will reference the first one. So when we generate the contract, we use a function called create2. And create2 gives you a deterministic address for a given contract for given parameters. So if you specify the Merkle root when you're creating that, it'll give you a deterministic address. And so it'll always give you the same contract. So it works in the same way. And then it also uses the proxy model that was just mentioned just to make it really cheap to deploy those.
Alpizo, I wanted to jump back. You mentioned clones. Maybe could you walk us through what is a clone? How does it compare to a proxy?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're similar in concept. I think the clone really is just it's a factory that creates new contracts with create2. It's just that when you use create2, I think the inputs are going to be the sender, which is like who's calling it, what the salt is, which for us is the split allocation, and then the bytecode. So what clones do is it simplifies the last part. The bytecode is already on the contract, so you can just reference itself, and then that is used in the deployment of the new contract. So it really is just a pattern of simplifying the process of creating new contracts with create2.
Great. So Graham, maybe you could walk us through in a similar way how mirror functions. And you mentioned, and I saw in the contract that, as you mentioned, building on Uniswap's work, their Merkle distributor. Maybe you could explain a little bit in what ways you extended that idea, and then also how one would interact with it if one was going straight to the contract, not using the mirror front end.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, we use a lot of like off-chain data when we do this. So this is like the big innovation with Merkle proofs is that you can have a database that sits outside of Ethereum, And that can have all of your data around who the recipients are and what their allocations are. And then all you need to do to reference that data is you need to put it into a tree and then create a Merkle root for it. And then that Merkle root actually allows you to prove any specific row in that database, basically. It's a way to think about it. And so as long as you have the Merkle root and you can use that tree to prove that you're part of the database, you can go and make a claim on the contract. And so the on-chain component just has a very short string. It's a bytes 32 string that contains the Merkle root. And then anyone can go and claim, but they do need to like have a proof that they can claim. They need to be able to prove that they're part of the database. But that proof is also very, very, very small. And the computation of actually doing the proving on chain is very gas efficient. And so what that allows you to do is have a massive database of millions and millions of records. But simultaneously be able to do transactions on chain with very efficient like gas usage and storage. And so, you know, that's why it's like sort of a radically different model. On Mara, you could basically create a drop that's percentage based that is completely trustless or completely trusted on chain. With millions of records, and then, you know, people could just like pull that those funds very efficiently.
So I think that's like super interesting use of that. And I think that brings us into kind of another point of the pull versus push model, where the foundation version with the push model, where it's automatically distributing funds, kind of takes a lot less tooling to create that and to implement that. But with this pull model and implementing it with up to like thousands of people being on the same split, there's obviously more tooling involved kind of off-chain to facilitate that. So can you kind of walk us through the other tooling that you've had to do, like maybe kind of some discovery features, like to figure out if you've been included in some kind of split or what kind of extra tooling do you need to facilitate this kind of model?
Right. So you do need to have, some other data that's off-chain. And I think a really good way to do that is to publish it to something like IPFS or Arweave and make that published on like an internal third-party tool. And then anyone can basically run a simple script that will create, you know, can verify that the Merkle root on-chain is the same as the database that they're seeing. And then they can trust that they're part of that that database. And then that won't change, right, ostensibly. If it's saved in something like IPFS, it should remain constant. There does need to be a simple script to create the proof that will be submitted on chain when they claim. And so there is some tooling around there that needs to exist. It's quite simple. It's open source, and a few people have different implementations. So, for example, Uniswap has one in their public repo, and we have one in our public repo. And so, you know, those tools will exist around the web. So it's fairly trivial to find these things and to actually create the proof and to verify the Merkle root on chain. But there does need to be UIs for it, right? So I think that gets into the fundamental difference between the two products. Foundation is a product that is very simple to use. It's sort of like the Instagram of NFTs, if you will. So they've really like narrowed in on the focus there, and so everything's sort of automatic. And for that use case, I think just keeping things on chain is great. Mara is more of like a publishing platform, so you know there's more interface and there's more like data and content. And so I think we have more like room to like allow for like broader and more atypical interfaces. Our product is just like a little bit set up like a little bit differently in a way that allows us to do that.
Very cool. I also noticed one difference. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Foundation allows for any ERC-20, at least at the contract level, maybe not in the interface, whereas Mirrors only accepts ETH and maybe WEETH. Is that correct?
It's actually just ETH at the moment. And we haven't really like iterated on the splits since we first pushed it out. There's like a number of like of improvements that I want to make on it. But we've just been building other things, you know, and we've done a few drops so far. So for example, Stateful at Mirror.xyz did a drop, which was an NFT series for the EIP 1559 launch. And that had a split that I believe went out to about 22 people who contributed to the EIP 1559 development. And those people each had an allocation of the funds, and it raised something like $1 million or something. And then it was split across all of those people. And so that use case works really well just for ETH. And we haven't really like found a use case with our existing users for creating something different, for example, any ERC20. But I think that people will want that eventually. And I think people will also want that for NFTs. And so I think that, you know, we'll be upgrading that at some point, or anybody can upgrade it, obviously, just submit a pull request or just, you know, somewhere. And I think that that would be really cool. And then one other like change that I would propose people think about is basically pooling these splits. So in all cases, when you're deploying this new proxy that we spoke about, the funds stay in that contract and you just pool from that specific contract. But if you're somebody who has inspired many like artifacts and you're getting splits on multiple contracts, you don't want to necessarily go and pool from each individual contract. It's much better if you can just go to a pool of funds and then submit your proof and claim. And so really pooling those funds is a much better model. And I think that a protocol that does splits in this like pooled way would be very cool and very useful. And we'll get around to it if somebody doesn't do it. So.
Yeah, and quick note from me, I think for us, we've already seen, you know, NFTs travel, and we've already seen NFTs being bought and sold, like foundation NFTs being bought and sold in different marketplaces and with different currencies. And so I think that is why we shipped out of the gate with the ERC20 support. Like, it was already happening, and we wanted to make sure we were able to support existing use cases.
For sure. I mean, I think it's fascinating and very cool. Sorry to just like jump in, but I think it's very cool that ETH has just been, you know, the native, like the, you know, the currency of these NFTs. And, you know, we made these design decisions early on when we were working with NFTs about whether to support auctioning in, you know, multiple tokens or whether even to use WETH, wrapped ETH. And we just decided to use native ETH, and that's worked really well. And I think that that's like just an amazing thing that's emerged in space, like ETH as currency.
No, 100% agree. How do I do emojis in here? There we go.
So Apisa, I think you made a good point about supporting kind of the secondary market and the interoperability of NFTs, which is such a big feature of that. So just kind of as a selfish question, how are you guys supporting secondary, like supporting the secondary, using the splits as a secondary for the secondary market? Are you, I know you have an integration with OpenSea. Is that kind of like a custom integration, or are you implementing one of the new royalties? I know there's like two or three like royalties interfaces that are going around. How are you guys doing that?
Yeah, so we, on the contract level, we are supporting, I forgot what the actual interface is called, but we're supporting on-chain royalty standard that I believe Rarible was one of the first people to use. We essentially, the way it works is that the NFT contract self-reports who the recipients should be, and what the essentially there is kind of like a baked-in split functionality in that implementation. But what we do is we pass our split contract as the destination address, and so if a sale happens with a marketplace contract that honors the NFT self-reported payment structure, then I think everything just happens automatically. And we've already seen this happen. Like we've seen DAI being used. We've seen, I think, RARI being used. We've seen WETH being used. And that just works out of the gate. And really, I think like for us at Foundation, like one of the core principles that we build with is at the application layer, we strive to be as simple as possible, which is why everything, you know, auto settles. We just use ETH. But that at the contract layer, we aim to be composable and interoperable. And so you can support, you know, when NFTs do travel and are bought and sold in other marketplaces.
Just to chime in, I think it's EIP 2981, perhaps. I pinned it in the conversation if anyone's curious.
Yeah, I believe the function name is get fees bips, I think.
But yeah, I'll have to look that up. There right now, there's kind of two competing royalties. There's the one that Rarible has kind of popularized and used, And is now implementing in their new Rareable protocol that they launched like last week. And then that one supports kind of splits out the gate where you can show multiple recipients directly from the royalties that are reported, that are self-reported. And then Nick, there's that other one that's a kind of a simpler kind of catch-all EIP for just reporting a singular kind of like how much you basically send in the price that somebody's paying, and that EIP returns how much should get sent and who it should get sent to. So I think the splits contract that Foundation has for sure, I know, kind of works with both of those actually, because it's a singular endpoint rather than enforcing splits at the kind of royalty level.
Yep. Yeah. Again, for us, composability, interoperability at the contract layer. So we that was by design.
Yeah. Graham, how does the secondary market work for Mir? Is there a thriving secondary market there? Do you see things traded on kind of OpenSea, and are you guys supporting that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, we're not like a necessarily like a platform that focuses on like NFTs as our like primary like core competency, but we do have obviously a lot of like NFTs that are being launched on the platform. And so far we've been working with OpenSea, which is the dominant secondary marketplace. And so that's how we do royalty fees. One of the problems with NFTs, like they really exploded with a standard that sort of wasn't, I don't know. I mean, it's not a fully functional like standard in some ways. There are a lot of things that people want to improve on it. But we're all using this NFT standard from 2017 or something.
Yeah, and I feel the same way about ERC-20.
Yeah, there are definitely some improvements, and that's sort of the issue with standards, right? And so we do implement some things for getting the royalty fee recipient on our contracts, but I don't feel like there's an emerged standard that everyone is using, so it's kind of hard to speak about it. And I think I just hope that we solve it over time, and it just gets easier.
Yeah, we're using a standard that was driven out by CryptoKitties, where I don't think royalties really made sense. But we now in this kind of the creator economy, it is a very big pain point that there isn't a standard that everybody's rallied around. So definitely something we're trying to help drive towards, especially with the Foundation style NFTs.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And then I would say that, splits will obviously work the same. Like if you send any ETH to one of our splits, it'll just work. And you can reuse those in perpetuity. So it's still interoperable in the same kind of way.
Before we dive a little bit further into technical details and maybe get some questions from the audience, just to let anybody know who's new to the room, we're talking to Graham and Alpizo, the CTOs, founding co-founders of Mirror and Foundation, and the authors or co-authors, maybe. Actually, maybe you could talk a little bit about what the collaborative process is like. But co-authors of the Split and Splits contracts for both of their respective platforms. I'm curious if you could maybe talk a little bit about the collaborative process of creating those, or if they were written by an individual. And also maybe if you have any sense of what the adoption of these two contracts have been on your respective platforms. Are they popular? Do people like them?
Yeah, so I am speaking on behalf of a team, but we actually have Paul Cowgill and Nick, who's I think his handle is Hardly Difficult, both of who are in the room. They're the heroes that actually that wrote the contracts for Foundation. And so I think if we want to, Paul and Nick, you guys can hop up and talk about the process. But really, it was a team effort for us to be able to ship this out there.
Very cool. And Graham, did you write it solo?
Yeah. So Mirror is only a few months old, and for a long time there was only four of us: one designer, CEO. Stack engineer, and then I was writing all the contracts. So I've done most of the work for for Mira's protocol development, but I must say that all of these contracts, what's really amazing about the space is that we're just constantly remixing work that, that people have done in the past. And it, that's just through open source, and people have been very generous with their licensing, which allows us to really like work together and collaborate and make like Ethereum development really great. And so these splits contracts, I mean, the Merkle proofs have been used, I believe since Raiden's implementation in like early 2017. And I mentioned like Amin Soleimani like made a port of it into Solidity, and then Open Zeppelin made something, and then Uniswap made something. And so the foundations for these, like, you know, it like they already go back deeply into like the history of like Ethereum development. And so we're all just like, you know, like working with each other in collaboration. I think that's what makes crypto work really cool. It's like there's so much collaboration as opposed to a lot of the Web2 companies where there's just competition and everything's siloed. All the code is siloed. So I constantly feel like I'm collaborating with people outside of the company, and that's really cool. I really like that. And then, you know, in recent days, we've hired three new people. And one's a protocol engineer, Carlos, who is at Sterling Home. And then we also have Tom on the front end, and Sareem, who's on our back end.
Very cool. And for each of you, how have you gauged like uptake amongst your users? It seems to me like splits are really popular on Mirror, and actually also on Foundation. I see really frequently lots of splits.
Yeah, I think don't have raw numbers for you, but definitely is popular. I mean, we're seeing splits all the time. I think even if you browse the Foundation homepage, you'll probably see a bunch of splits. And so definitely popular. We've gotten both quantitative and qualitative feedback that it is something that people wanted. And so, I think it's here to stay, and I think we'll continue to build on top of that.
Yeah, likewise for us. I mean, I think people have used it in really creative ways. You know, one of my favorite is the one that I mentioned with the EIP 1559 series, where it was, we had quite a substantial amount of funding being granted to the people who contributed to that Ethereum upgrade. So that was like amazing to see. And then people are using it a lot in terms of like giving reference for like ideas for their like posts. So really excited to see how people continue to use it. And particularly these cases where, you know, there's like a lot of people included in a split. I think that's really cool. It's a really cool way to like create community.
Yeah, I think it makes sense for all kinds of projects in NFTs or otherwise that people would like to do on-chain collaborations and payouts. It simplifies things as compared to any kind of legal arrangement. Obviously, we haven't even talked about how useful this is just for regular folks, but it's also just superior for the story if you have multiple people invested in splitting the revenues from a sale. It puts all the that much more force behind promotion and spreading it across multiple networks. So this is obviously a product that people really want.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just add, there's a lot of really cool kind of emergent behavior we're seeing with splits as well. Like we didn't start this, but we're definitely trying to, help people visualize it a lot more. But we just started seeing people split with organizations. So nonprofits, they'll mint an NFT and, you know, split 25% of the revenue in perpetuity to different nonprofits. And so I think we're just at the beginning of watching how this will play out.
Yeah, I think from a conceptual level, rather like even just beyond the practical part of splitting payments, I think like splitting the recognition of what went into these projects, I think that's a really kind of core feature. And it is kind of, it also brings into a lot of the same concepts of like DAOs and protocols, and once people are involved and bought in, they're way more invested personally in that, and they'll go out and share that. So you kind of get built in marketing and community and all of that by building in splits and having people invested in this going forward.
Yeah, totally. It's so cool, right? Like DeFi in some ways was like so single player. You know, it was like I'm doing this trade, I'm making some money, I'm yield farming, but it was very like an individualist like experience. And with NFTs, it's sort of cultural and community based. And so that's why I think in this space, things like splitting just makes so much sense. Because you just have this like inherent like community of people who are, you know, part of this like socioeconomic network around a cultural like artifact. And then obviously you have like over time you have this recurring revenue through secondary sales, and you can like share that with the community, with the network. This is a fascinating, like, multiplayer crypto is like really innovative.
Hey, Paul, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Nothing at the moment, but loving the conversation, and feel free to rope me in for a specific
question. Yeah, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the process, given that Foundation's contract is written more as a collaborative effort. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how that worked, and maybe one specific thing I'd love to know is, how much did your approach change through the process of writing the contract?
Yeah, well, you're queuing up one of my favorite dad jokes, which is, if this collab were a split, I think Nick probably deserves the bulk of the credit. We were certainly collaborating on the Solidity side of things. So as we're kind of conceptualizing the feature, we roped in a bunch of different people on the Foundation team outside of just the engineering team to talk about like the use case and like to land on the push versus pull decision. And then obviously LPs have played a huge role in like choosing the overall strategy here, and also a lot of the Solidity review and being a good sounding board for how we built it. And then, but yeah, Nick did like certainly the lion's share of the Solidity work. And I was helping out with PR reviews. And as we got close to shipping it to prod, running it through like several security reviews. Let's see. And
I would,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I would also add, I love Paul's joke, but the split would also go towards, you know, we have a very solid design team, and also just like the community team. And so we built the split kind of, this is a theme for us at Foundation. We go end to end, right? So it's not just a smart contract feature. We look at what the designs would look like, how the user experience would look. So it really was a large collaborative effort across the team.
Yeah, big plus one.
Yeah, Paul, you mentioned security, that all the security ideas that you guys went through or concerns that you guys addressed. I do have a fairly technical question. Beyond just the normal splitting process, in your contract, you include a delegate call to be able to call from, like, using the split contract as the caller, basically. And the way you document this is, just in case someone sent an NFT or some other asset or something that's not an ERC-20 token or not ETH directly to your split contract, you want to be able to rescue that. You want a rescue mission and do that. And it's also kind of leaves it open for the future in case you need to do some specific thing. So is there a security concern there of just leaving in kind of an open idea of being able to call any function from there? Or did you think of like adding kind of like a interface for 721 contracts, like just be able to call those? Was there a trade-off there that you guys took into account?
Yeah, we definitely considered explicitly targeting just like the 721 use case. It's certainly something we thought quite a bit about, and Nick's also on this call and can feel free to weigh in if he likes. We ran it through our process and didn't see any specific security issues there with the way we implemented it. And probably good to give a shout out at this point to Immunify, which is where we have a bounty program. If people do ever encounter anything, we have bounties set up through them. So please do feel free to reach out. But yeah, Nick or El Pizzo, any color to add there?
No, yeah, I think we in this case, we opted for, you know, future proofing and flexibility. And I think for us, like, this is we essentially treat it like a one-event multi-sig, our split contract. And so there is authentication and authorization kind of like baked into that function call, but we did want to future proof it just in case there were future use cases that we didn't think about.
Yeah, that's a great idea. When I first saw it, I thought of like somebody figuring out that there's an NFT stored there and just like yoinking it from everybody else in the split, which I thought was kind of a funny use case. And there's not I don't know what you could really do besides maybe like fractionalize that or something, but that may be overcomplicating it. I know Nick's a big fan of the fractionalized NFT movement.
Yeah, I think the assumption we're definitely making here is that people who enter into a split agreement, there's some level of trust baked in, right? And so that's why that's kind of the assumption that we went with in terms of building it as a one-event multi-sig. there's, I think the allocation of the revenue was important in terms of just like who got how much. And that was also, you know, part of the thinking around, you know, baking the ERC-20 split. But ERC-721 didn't quite make sense. We didn't have fractionalization baked in, and we didn't want to add additional complexity. And so we handled ETH, we handled ERC-20s natively in terms of the split allocation. But then for the proxy call, we just decided it's a one event.
Yeah, in any case where it was very clear what the community would want us to enforce about the permissions, we went ahead and implemented that, like for the ERC-20 use case. But I think it's still open-ended, exactly what the broader ecosystem would expect to happen for NFTs.
And one really cool thing to call out here is, you know, we built for composability, we built for interoperability. And actually what the proxy call also allows us to do is, if a foundation split, like, you know, something built off of our factory is a recipient of a mirror split where you need to claim, we actually support that use case as well. And so this is, I think, a power of you know, building for composability and interoperability in the smart contract space.
If anyone would like to ask questions, I see Jeremy's requested. I'm going to add him as a speaker. Ideally, technical as possible, the questions. And I also see we've got Philippe, who's the author of ERC 1155. If you have anything you want to chime in with as an EIP author, super interested to hear what you have to say. Jeremy, it's all yours.
Yeah, I was just curious how everyone here is kind of thinking about fractionalization with regards to splits. Because I've had some talks with Mike about this, and you know, in a world where, say, you know, half or more of all sort of fine art NFTs are fractionalized, you know, do you see that being like, in one case, you could have people who are just kind of trading the ERC-20s, and that is where you're getting the derived value of the NFT. But you could also have something more akin to fractional or party bid, where people are then voting on the reserve price of that NFT to be sold at. And in the former, you know, trading with those ERC-20s doesn't really honor any kind of creator share for an NFT, which is slightly, you know, off tangent from a split. But yeah, I'm just curious if you guys have been thinking about that at all, how you maybe see that unfolding in a world where more and more NFTs are becoming fractionalized.
Yeah, I think there's two parts of this, which I think you're touching on. Splits is working on the creator side, so it's for royalties, and then fractionalization usually is on the collector side, at least in the primary. And I think you're hinting at here is just like, is there a problem if fractionalization and results in like less liquidity for the NFT itself, right? Like liquidity moves to the ERC-20 instead. And so I think definitely something we're in constant conversations with, you know, both Andy from Fractional, the Party DAO crew. I think this is something that we just have to, you know, discuss as an ecosystem. How do we ensure that the creators continue to get value from the value that they're generating? But there's no, I think we're so early that there's no like right answer here yet, right? Like things I've heard about is that you can, you know, give the original creator, you know, a portion of the fractional like ERC-20s, or you have some inflation policy. But I also think that I think in the near term, at least, is like a lot of these people they'll buy we buy the NFTs together. There's got to be, you know, there's speculation in the near term, but there's got to be some way of also like reselling that back into the market for the ERC-20s to have value. And so I think at least in the very near term, I do think NFTs will end up in the secondary even after it's been fractionalized. But I think we'll just have to continue, you know, being in conversation as the space evolves.
Totally. Yeah, thank you for that. One thing that I think still kind of remains to be seen is how willing are people or how many people will actually kind of rally around you know, quote unquote governance or voting on, you know, the reserve price of an NFT and coming to a conclusion around that. Just looking at some DeFi protocols and even ones that have relatively high participation in voting still isn't like, you know, a huge amount of people. And so I'm curious to see how that will all kind of shake out. And, you know, apologies for the slight tangent here, but I do think all the work that both Foundation and Mirror are doing on this front is really cool. And it's cool to see how, you know, even in very different use cases, there's lots of different pros and cons and trade-offs. And I love that. I had no idea that the foundation splits sort of support forwarding to the mirror splits, or rather the other way around. So anyways, thank you for both for the work and for the time and answers here.
Cool. I mean,
I need to
say that, like, you know, this whole like fractional ownership of NFTs is a new paradigm. And I think that it just raises the potential sale price, even the primary sale, the primary sale price for all NFTs. I think that that's an amazing thing. So the problem around royalties, I think, you know, you have this trade-off. If the NFT is fractionalized, you know, maybe you have like fewer secondary sales, but the primary sales and each individual sale is probably much, much higher because of this new paradigm. And so I think that that's really cool. There are obviously like ways that you'd be able to prevent fractionalization of an NFT because they're programmable. And I think it'd be interesting to see if anyone would really want that kind of NFT. I would imagine not. It's kind of interesting. And then like regarding governance, I think that in DeFi, there's often not a direct incentive to participate in governance, and there's a lot of friction to it, right? So you don't have apps with notifications that tell you when a new proposal is created and when the deadline is to vote on it. So there's friction, but then there also isn't like a direct incentive. But in this model where people are setting the reserve price, I think people might be a lot more interested to participate in governance. Because it's much more closely related to their actual, like the value that they're holding, just in a more direct way than I think like a protocol upgrade might be, or like a funding grant.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's like, if I can cash out, you know, 5x what I put in on the specific NFT, I might be a lot more incentivized to participate in that vote. If you don't mind, I do actually have one more question, on the foundation split side of things. I haven't personally gone through the flow of creating a split, but I'm curious what that actually looks like how much of it is sort of like front end logic that is pointing, you know, the reserve auctions being created for an individual NFT at the split, and how sort of like the creator share works under the hood there. I haven't actually taken a look at the contracts myself, but and apologies if this was already touched on, but very curious how that works sort of on Foundation's front end / smart contracts, and is that something that can be extensible to other UIs, or does that require some amount of knowledge of, you know, which splits are tied to which NFTs off chain?
Yeah, so it's definitely not coupled with our front end at all, and I'll actually touch on a few cool things that you could do at the contract layer. The actual flow itself, the split, like tying the split to the NFT, happens at mint time, so not at list time, and those are, for people in the room that are more technical, those are two different contracts. There's the NFT contract, and then there's kind of the auctions marketplace smart contract. And so when you mint, essentially you're just specifying the split contract that the payment should be routed to. And what the front end does is it essentially passes in the split allocation. It passes the addresses in alphabetically to make sure that it is deterministic and that we're not deploying a new contract. But once you've either determined that the split contract exists for this specific allocation, or that you've deployed it, then I think that goes into the NFT contract and is baked into that NFT from then on. And that is how we're able to, you know, support, you know, royalties even if it's sold off of Foundation. And then in terms of, you know, being able to directly interface with it on Etherscan, it'd be a little more complicated just because the UI is not tying it up for you, but you can totally go and create and clone our split contract on Etherscan. You'd have to make sure that you're passing in, you know, the recipients in the right format. That's something that you're able to do off the UI. And in fact, you can actually create this even outside of like the NFT context. You can just create a split contract that automatically reroutes revenue for a set of participants. And so you could do that, and then you could pass that in when you mint, also via Etherscan. So all of these things, again, composable, interoperable. Our UI just does a good job of like simplifying things and making sure the experience is right. And then I think one more point here for me is if you are doing things on Etherscan, Again, the UI won't support this, but you can actually also, if you have an existing a mirror split, you can actually mint the foundation NFT with a mirror split as well. So again, like interoperable at the contract layer, we're just simplifying things on the front end.
That's dope. Thank you so much for that answer. And yeah, appreciate everyone here.
Awesome. So Cyprian, I think you have a question, and then I have another technical question I'd like to ask afterwards.
Cool. Well, first of all, thanks a lot, Nick, for organizing this space. Super interesting conversation as in the beginning. On my side, so we're building Beam, which is a live events and VOD platform. And what's very interesting is that I feel that we could make use of both type of splits. Because on one side, you have the an event, for example, where you have kind of a limited number of participants. So in that case, I think the foundation split would work, because people that organize events, like live events or like live streams, basically, wouldn't have to like come back afterwards and claim their share of the revenues of each ticket sale. But on the other side, we're also working on the VOD part, where you have kind of a unique video, which is minted as an NFT, as the master video. And that thing could have like thousands of participants. I mean, we're talking with like big movie producers. So they have like hundreds or thousands of participants that worked to produce that type of content. And in this case, I think the mirror one would apply. I think it's super interesting to see like those both approaches. And my question really was for kind of everyone here, what do you think, is there like a new way to do splits that would be like way more, even more streamlined for anyone else to build that very quickly? Or is it kind of on us to build the front ends to make them very easy to produce? And really, like we've been talking about the creator economy before, and I think this is where we'll be able to onboard a lot of people to really have straightforward UI where you can create splits and distribute revenues for content creating.
Yeah, I think definitely like these contracts are like public domain. Like anybody can go and interact with these. We don't have a separate UI for creating splits with our contract, but someone can definitely build that. I imagine, I don't want to speak for Graham, but I imagine it's the same way for Mirror as well. If somebody wants to build a front end to figure out how to create these splits for other use cases, definitely can.
Yeah, I would say for that specific use case that I heard, if you were to use the Mirror contract, you could specify, you said you have thousands of people that you are allocating to. Those people, you know, we framed this conversation in the beginning as like a pool model versus a push model. But with the pool model, it is open for anybody to call that function. You don't have to be the person who's actually going to receive the funds to be the person who initiates those funds being sent. And so you can actually have a hybrid of these two by starting with the pool model, but then adding on functionality for claiming on behalf of everyone else. So if you are willing to pay the gas fee, which is not an outrageous amount, to claim on behalf of those people, then you know you can definitely make a hybrid approach where you kind of do both. But that said, if you have thousands of people, like you probably wouldn't want to claim for each of them just because it would end up being like thousands of dollars probably to claim for everyone. Yeah.
The goal is to make it on an L2. So
yes.
The gas, yeah, to reduce the gas impact for everyone.
Exactly. So, you know, like, so we spent like a couple of days like prototyping and like we run pretty fast. So it's like we went through all of these like options and in the quadrants, there's like pool model, there's push model, and then there's L2 is like one of these like quadrants. And you still have to deal with the bridge, right? So it's still a pool model in some ways because your end user is probably on L1. And then your maybe your creator is on L2, and then they're distributing the funds through L2 to all of the addresses that are counterfactually like on the L2. Then the person on L1 needs to go and pull it back to L1 if they want to get it out. it's still kind of a pull model, and so you still have this like this transaction fee of pulling it out. But if this becomes a protocol, if somebody builds a splits protocol, or if sort of a platform like Foundation or Mira wanted to keep the funds in the L2 because they have there's like some other purpose for it being there, like you can do other things with it, then that model actually becomes efficient. And I think that will probably be like the dominant use case for splits. Will just be within an L2, and then you know there's other things that you can do. But the problem is that like people aren't living in the L2, so you still have the pool based model if you're going to go with the L2. Does that make sense? Kind of like rush that explanation.
Yeah, definitely. I think the issue of the L2s being kind of walled garden right now is really hard to work on when you're building like a mainstream app.
Yeah.
But the goal also would be to have at a short term level. I mean, Polygon already has I think ramp outs and ramp in fiat. So as we see more of those models, some creators will not actually care about the L1. They will be like, hey, I'm receiving revenue on L2. I can withdraw to my bank account on L2. Then I'm happy with that. So that's where like the actual trade-off is like, do you want to have something that is efficient and used by a lot of people, but you kind of stay in your L2, or have like take into account the bridge cost to L1 on every decision implementation that you make?
Yeah. So I actually, I like prototype this on ZK Sync on Rinkeby using L2 and without using the pool model, just basically doing raw transactions. And it worked really well. It was kind of cool. Basically, I had a post that had a tree of people who were recipients. That was like, and it was like nested, right? So you could have, you know, these people specify other people as, you know, their inspiration, and the whole tree of like inspiration around like a post, and then executing as just like individual transfers, going through that stepping through that tree, and it was kind of beautiful, and like. Like there's so much possibility there when like L2s become more readily like available for people to use, more accessible.
Okay, so we're super coming cool. up on the hour. I know El Piso has a hard stop, so I wanted to say goodbye. Graham, do you have another few minutes? I have a technical question if you do. If not, we can say goodbye to everybody right now.
Yeah, let's do more technical questions.
Okay, great. Let's stay on for another 10 minutes. So thank you, El Piso, for coming through. Paul, also from Foundation. If you have anything to plug from Foundation, I know you've got the Worlds feature. Is that maybe the latest cool feature out of Foundation?
No, I mean, Worlds we have is not quite public yet. I think the latest feature is private sales. If you have an NFT that you do not want to go on auction, or somebody's making a request, but you still want the transaction to be reflected on chain, you can use that functionality on Foundation. But really the big plug is we're hiring. So anybody interested in working on all the stuff that we talked about, hit me up in DMs. There's also Mark, I believe, is in this chat. You can hit him up as well. But yeah, really good chatting with everybody. Appreciate you guys having us. And we'll chat soon, hopefully.
Awesome. Thank you for coming through. Thanks for sharing your insights.
Thanks, Lopito.
Cheers.
Yeah, so Graham, I had, and thank you, Paul, also, if you have to run, by the way. Graham, I had a question for you. So the Mirror split contract has a notion of windows, which is maybe not so obvious. I've actually pinned for anybody in the audience, or the most recent pinned tweet at the top there includes links to both contracts, if you're curious to take a look. So Mirror has this notion of windows, which is maybe not so obvious to someone reading the contract, how it works. Could you explain a little bit about why one would want to increment the windows and why it's written this way?
Yeah, definitely. So the problem with making the contract reusable over time while maintaining allocations for people, so people have like shares, like 20% of all the funds, is that imagine a case where, you know, 100 ETH comes in and you have a 20% share, and then you claim and then nobody else claims, and then another 10 ETH comes. You know, do you still have the rights to withdraw 20% of that new 10 ETH? You know, like how would that work? And so the way that we solve that problem is basically imagining it as these windows of balances instead of like the actual current balance. And so when funds come in, when that first 100 ETH comes in, you create a window, and then anyone can claim all of the funds that they're allocated within that window. And then as new funds come in, they can't claim those yet until the window is incremented to include the new balance. So that's kind of like, if you imagine like deploying a new splits contract each time, but instead of doing that, you're just like incrementing a window and saying, okay, now everyone can claim like the new set of, the new batch of ETH that has come in. And when you call this function, it's all abstracted, right? So on the front end, you just click one button, which is claim, and then it iterates through all the windows. So there's no real like burden or friction for like the end user. But the creator, or like the person who's operating the splits contract, should have in mind the idea that like if they're like reusing the contract each time they basically reuse it, they want to like increment the win.
Very cool.
Yeah, just extending on that a little bit, and not to put you on the spot here, but that is very reliant on kind of the feature of sending ETH or just supporting ETH, because there's kind of a hook feature of receiving ETH that you can run some code to kind of track how much ETH you've actually received in that window. But kind of thinking about extending this to support ERC-20s, is there a way that you envision kind of extending that functionality to also support ERC-20s, even though they don't have that kind of hook function?
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, I haven't thought about it for ERC-20s. I'm sure if we did, we'd find something. But yeah, just off the top of my head, there's no way to hook into an ERC-20s transfer function, right, from the contract. So there probably isn't a way to do that. That said, you know, maybe there's like a trusted way that somebody can snapshot the balance at any time. And so basically maybe you call increment window and then it, you know, gets the balance of the ERC-20 token for the split. And and that maybe that's how it works. And maybe that just ends up being like exactly the same. Maybe.
Yeah. That's kind of how I was just walking through that while you were talking about it, and like maybe you'd probably have to create a new window every time anybody withdrew, and then you have to have like a mapping of windows for different ERC-20 tokens, probably.
Right. Yeah. It could end up being like a little bit complicated like that. You know, like I said, I think somebody can create like a protocol around this, and it could be very cool. But you basically pool the funds, and you abstract some of this stuff into a UI. And I think that like the whole community, like the whole Ethereum, could basically like use this, where they like pool funds, and then you create like lots of instantiations of different splits. And that's really cool. If you want to like donate to charities, for example, there can just be a list of like six charities, you know, around a particular topic. And then that's a split that exists on this protocol. And anyone can just donate constantly to that, you know, that address. And then they can compose splits. I think that's a beautiful thing. And I'd love somebody to like look into building that.
Yeah, you can kind of think of it as like an index fund, but to donate to or to split money with.
Exactly. And because they're composable, right? It's like an index fund that is a tree that can.
I'm just thinking about, I think another good or interesting use case that I'm personally looking into is using this kind of thing for like a treasury management, where you can have like many stakeholders that can use this to like, if you can think of it as kind of like a business, like an on-chain business management solution, where you have many stakeholders of a business that can claim dividends using this same kind of Merkle tree kind of thing. So that's kind of the use case I'm thinking for this.
Do you want to know like the first time I got really excited about this? It's kind of a like an idiosyncratic, like a strange example, but I thought of like budgeting when a government does a budget. Like if you think of like a massive state like doing a budget, right? It has like the defense budget, and it has the education budget, et cetera, et cetera. And these are, you know, at least from like a trivial perspective, like they're kind of like allocations that are percentage based off the total GDP or the total like revenue of that state. And so as taxes come in, they can just be channeled according to this allocation, and people could like vote on that allocation, right? So if you said like, you know, our state like really prioritizes education above like military, then you would have a higher percentage allocation of your total revenue, right? And I just thought that was like amazing, because you could just get a really like trustless setup for funding some kind of like entity like that. knowing where the budget will be allocated beforehand, and then those, like, you know, divisions could just pull the funds from the contract. And I thought that was amazing. So I was like, you know, maybe this one day will be the case where you have these like crypto civilizations, and speak, and they have like budgeting set up in this like way with splits, and you know, tax revenue goes into a treasury and it just gets allocated, and people can pull and they can vote on that allocation, but it will be set for, you know, a quarter or a year or a term. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super fascinating. I think there's going to be a lot of kind of business use cases as we get more assets created in like on the chain, and we bring more like real world use cases on chain to help support that. I think like kind of dividend payments and tax revenues and that kind of stuff is going to be a big use case in the fairly near future.
Very cool. So as we come up on an hour and 10 minutes, I want to thank everybody for joining in. Graham, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and insights about the process of writing the contracts and thoughts about it. I'm curious, do you have anything to shill from Mirror, latest projects, new products?
Definitely. Okay, so three things. So one, if anyone is, you know, listening to this, they probably are interested in like the technical details of some of these features. And so you can always find more information on dev.mirror.xyz. Where we just go into depth on all these things, like how the Merkle trees, like, you know, work and all that. The other thing would be, you know, check out some of the crowd funds that are taking place in Mirror at the moment. So one is Black Hand, which is spelled BLVKHVND.mirror.xyz. They are crowdfunding at the moment for a Web3 gaming, Web3 like gaming platform. And it's currently raised 314 ETH, which is about $1 million. And it's open for anyone to contribute to. So I would definitely check that out and just see, you know, this is kind of like what Mirror is all about, and maybe like contribute to it and see how it works. A previous example would be like PartyBid, which ended up becoming a very successful product. And so hopefully the same thing will happen with like this Black Hand project. And then third thing would be, yeah, obviously, you know, we're hiring. And so if you're interested, please reach out and set up a call with us and talk through what it might be like joining our team. Thank you very much for having me. This is awesome.
Awesome. Amazing. And Paul, thank you also. Garrett, thank you also. Paul, actually, I'll ask you a hot seat question before we go. When Foundation GitHub, when are we going to see it?
We actually do already have some docs available for our smart contracts and our subgraph on GitHub. I'm not sure we have a concrete plan at this time. Definitely something we're keeping an eye out for, but just optimizing for velocity and security. And while also optimizing for interoperability and composability. So please stay tuned, but nothing to announce at this time.
Awesome, awesome. And if anyone is curious, the split contract for Foundation and Mirror are both verified on Etherscan. And you can find Mirrors also on GitHub. So thank you everyone for joining in, and hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Yeah, thanks Nick for setting all this up. We'd love to come back and do it again some other time.
Yeah, same. Thank you very much.